minutes, 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning to all these lovely people. Okay, thank you very much.
We're at the Strand Bookstore here in New York City at 12th Street and Broadway, broadcasting live. We're giving away coffee momentarily. That was an uncoffeed applause break right there. Very impressive from these people that have showed up today. There's literally 400 people, but there's still room. If you want to come down, we're on the second floor, broadcasting live from the Strand Bookstore in New York. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you, people, for coming down. I love bookstores, and it's weird. It's a lot different vibe. We were broadcasting from the City Bakery last week, and this week, it's definitely, the books demand a lot of respect, a lot of attention. We're surrounded by books, and there's that vibe in here where it's like, do we need to be quiet? Should we be polite? You can feel the book sweat on the shelves. I think they just added this whole new second floor, and it's unbelievable up here. I don't know if you've been to the Strand. It's a New York institution. This place is 8 miles of books. They used to bill it as. There's literally thousands and thousands of books. There's a man here pointing at the sign. Yes, I can see. 18 miles of books. Thank you for correcting me. It used to be 8 when I was a kid. See, it was still stuck in my head, you know. When I was much younger, my grandmother used to take me here when it was just 8 miles of books. And now, I guess, with the second edition. But what's amazing is that they, unlike a Barnes & Noble's, the Strand also does a tremendous business in used books. And this whole second floor, even though it's brand new, it doesn't have that weird, sterilized, Disney-fied Barnes & Noble's feel. It has a lot of, It looks great, doesn't it?
Yeah!
A little applause for the Strand. Later in the show, we're going to have Steve Virginia Fields, Manhattan Borough President and Democratic primary candidate for New York City Mayor. We're going to talk to Fred and Nancy Bass, who own the Strand Bookstore. Mark Riley, by the way, is in Disney World right now. And if I know Riley, Riley's on his way to the airport right now, listening to us, laughing. Hey, Riley, I know you're listening, man. Don't be afraid of the flight. It's going to be fine. He's going down there for the weekend with his kids. Let's get into a little bit of news. The Census Bureau report issued Thursday said Hispanics accounted for half the 2.9 million U.S. population growth from 2003 to 2004 and now constitute 1/7 of all the people in the United States. That's nice news coming into the Puerto Rican Day Parade weekend. The Hispanics are winning, apparently. Which is great. I'm all for it. The trend probably will continue because of immigration and Hispanic birth rate outstripping non-Hispanic blacks and whites. The agency estimated there are 41.3 million Hispanics in the United States. The Bureau does not ask about legal status, so its numbers are intended to include everyone. Lou Dobbs, of course, will be asking about the legal status later in his show every day for the rest of his life. The population growth for Asians ran a close second. Increases in both groups are due largely to immigration, but also higher birth weights. And this is I think at the core of the big fear of the Christian right is that they're going to be outpaced by the Catholic Latinos and that they need to figure out a way to scare the hell out of people so they'll have more babies. And that's why they're sort of deifying the unborn. But we'll get into that a little bit. The Harry and Howie show took place yesterday in the Senate. Democratic Party Chairman Howard Dean said Thursday that the recent controversy over his comments isn't going to stop congressional Democrats from focusing on issues like Social Security, gas prices, and the war in Iraq. And I'll quote Dean, I think a lot of this is exactly what the Republicans want, and that's a diversion, end quote. Dean said after meeting with Senate Democrat leader Harry Reid. Good for Harry Reid for reaching out to Howard Dean. Am I right? I mean, what's with those weird centrocrat freaks? What's with there's no movement towards the middle. What's with John Edwards and Nancy Pelosi, who was a little diplomatic, but Joe Biden as well? What's that? Exactly. Are you the guy that called Senator MBN? What is it? MB? That's absolutely right, the big credit card company. Well, the thing is that Joe Biden and John Edwards and Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton did make a comment, but it's not that difficult for us not to divide and conquer ourselves. It's not that difficult for us not to fight with each other. All they got to say is, yeah, that's Howard. What's wrong with just saying, hey, that's Howard. That's, Howard Dean, Howard Dean represents, you know, core values of the Democratic Party, and he's got the courage and the passion to speak up to authority and to speak out against the Republican administration. And I don't think Democrats should distance themselves. What kind of Democrat would distance themselves from Howard Dean and then say, well, that, you know, he doesn't represent all our views? Why don't you just say, hey, that's Howard. That's all. That's all it takes. And that's what Harry Reid basically said yesterday. And when commenting about his conversation with Harry Reid, Dean said, quote, "We haven't had any discussions about what's going on in the media circus and all that stuff in the last 2 weeks," Dean said. "What we're focused on is how to have a decent social security system, how to have a strong national defense, how to have jobs in America again, how to deal with incredibly high gas prices and get a decent energy bill, which actually will do something about gas prices." Wow, there's a Democrat that seems to be talking about things that are important as opposed to their own careers. Reid has been criticized for making strong comments as well. That's true. He did call Bush a loser, which he retracted it, though, because, you know, he is a loser, but apparently somebody decided that he won. It wasn't the people of this country, but, you know, he seems to think so. I don't, you know, this is the always the amazing thing that baffles me about, I was doing stand-up last weekend, and I had one of those instances where I was talking on stage, and one of these people called me, you know, anti-American. You know, when, you know, I got one of those sort of comments like, "Boo, why don't you? You're not American." You know, and I don't understand how they don't judge this guy. Yeah, how they don't judge Bush. Why don't they blame Bush? Why can't we just blame Bush? I mean, isn't part of morality taking responsibility for your actions, being contrite, apologizing when necessary? You know, being a true leader in the sense of caring and tolerance. I mean, I don't understand where these people get off on calling me anti-American when, you know, what happened to debate? What happened to tolerance? What happened to respect for dissent? Why doesn't this? I mean, that's what democracy was built on, not sort of, you know, narrow-minded belligerence and bigoting. It, you know, drives me nuts, you know, when I have to deal with people who say that, because they're the ones that are anti-American. Am I wrong, people? That's hilarious. We are talking about the issues today. We are talking about the issues. We've got a good crowd down here. It's a growing crowd. It's like it's a tide pool of a crowd. It's the beginning of a crowd. We're broadcasting live from New York's famous Strand Bookstores, which is now 18 miles of books. I mistakenly said 8 miles of books, and I was made to look silly by a man sitting up front who pointed to the sign directly over my head and said, "No, dumb man with the microphone, it's 18 miles of books. Wake up, stupid." So we're going to be giving away. We got coffee here. We got the guys from the mud truck who are here putting out coffee. There's plenty of books, which aren't free, but you can come look at the books. Feel free to handle them. We will be giving away some books later in our show. We have Eric Bogosian with us. We're going to have C. Virginia Fields, a Manhattan Borough president and Democratic primary candidate for New York City mayor. Comedian Jim David will be with us later. He's very funny. Political cartoonist Ward Sutton. And just a few minutes, we're going to get into a new revelation about the FBI and the CIA in a competition, as usual. But because of the competitive nature of the two organizations, a couple of terrorists, actual terrorists, who are part of the 9/11, who are part of flying planes into the Pentagon, into the World Trade Center, slipped through the cracks because of these, the pride of these two agencies. That story and more coming up next. It's 14 past the hour. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Good morning. It's 19 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley is on his way to Disney World, and that's not a joke. He's really on his way to Disney World right now. He's going to Disney World with the family. We are broadcasting live from New York's famous Strand Bookstore at the corner of 12th and Broadway. We're giving away coffee and prizes, so come down and see us and hang out. The mud truck is here giving away this coffee that is insane. It is insane. That coffee, I haven't had coffee like that since San Francisco. And I realized, like, when I was in San Francisco, I was there for 2 years, and I have very little recollection of what I did in San Francisco other than drink coffee. I have no idea. I just drank coffee like this, and I realized that when I taste that coffee, I used to smoke cigarettes. So I'd drink a cup of coffee that was as strong as that mud truck coffee, and I'd smoke three cigarettes, and I'd just be like, ah! And
and I'd exhaust myself for the day. I'd have to take a nap just to detoxify from coffee and cigarettes. But it's good. It'll get you going. It'll put you into some sort of a frenetic coffee paralysis. You all right, buddy? Take it easy, man. Got a guy up front that I think might have lost part of his lung. But that's good. Laughing is good. Speaking of laughing, I'll be performing it live at Bonetta. How about that for a segue? I'll be at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday, June 25th. Go to bananascomedyclub.com for ticket info, and I'm going to give away some free tickets for some Manhattanites to win a trip to New Jersey, sir. How exciting is that? Huh? We're going to take you and a friend to New Jersey. That's right, on a big Saturday night here in New York City. Where would you rather be? New Jersey. Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. That's where we're going. So, good. I'm glad you're excited. See, Virginia Fields will be out here in a little while. She's a Manhattan Borough President and Democratic primary candidate for New York City Mayor. I will tell you about the FBI and the CIA's bickering that could have led to some terrorism, obviously. But first, you know, every morning, I try to tackle the specifics of breaking stories out of Washington, around the world, my own life. And I really try to drill into what, you know, each story specific means. But sometimes, man, it overwhelms me a little and, frankly, sends me into a bit of a brain skid. Yeah. How's that for a skit? Now, this is a little something that I've been thinking about this because now I'm in a bookstore. And I don't know about you, but whenever I walk into a place where there's a lot of stuff, a lot of books, I get overwhelmed and exhausted and I need to take a nap because there's too much information. There's part of me that's just sort of like, I need to know everything in here. Can I know everything in here? Now, I want to get into this idea of planned obsolescence. You know what planned obsolescence is? Planned obsolescence, according to its creator, industrial designer Brooke Stevens, is instilling in the buyer the desire to own something a little newer, a little better, a little sooner than necessary. Now, look, I desire newer, better things, but I don't like to buy much of anything. I talk myself out of it. I actually will pick up products in the store, walk around with them for a while, picture myself owning them, get to the register, and right at the last minute put it back. I do this with clothes, CDs, food. I walked around Whole Foods for 20 minutes with a bunch of beets and a papaya before I put them back. I wasn't even going shopping. I was just walking by, you know, but they look good. So I wanted to have the experience. It's like the consumer version of copping a feel. But this isn't about food, folks. This is about furniture. Let me tell you a story. A while back, I inherited a couple of pieces of 60s Swedish modern furniture from my great aunt. It was a coffee table and a chair. They are sturdy, groovy, aging nicely. I like old stuff with integrity. Now, when I moved back into my apartment in New York City, these were the only two pieces of furniture I had. It was a very minimal scene. It was me, the chair, the table, and my self-hatred. In an attempt to match their feel, I went to IKEA and I actually bought about $4,000 worth of IKEA Instant Life furniture and accessories. It felt good. Only almost exactly a year later, it's all falling apart in unison at the same time. IKEA is postmodern, disposable, Swedish modern. This is planned obsolescence perfected. It's engineered disintegration. Now products just turn into garbage, sometimes within weeks of purchase. I didn't expect it to last forever, but a year? I mean, am I wrong, or do you remember a time when the jeans you bought were stiff and almost unwearable for weeks and lasted forever? A time when, am I right? It's true. A time when a pair of good shoes, you could walk you through a lifetime, and watches were passed down for generations. I mean, I thought I would have my records until I died. Now I think I bought Let It Be by the Beatles in cassette and three versions on CD, one that wasn't mixed properly, one with instruments missing, and one with songs added that were probably left out for a reason. This is the heart of planned obsolescence, getting people to buy the same thing again and again because it has been improved or made obsolete, or getting us to lower our standards and just accept that it's garbage and it's not going to last. Just like we're not going to last. We, as people, we only have a limited amount of time in this life. Companies want to maximize the amount of stuff we can buy, and they do it by making it cheap and crappy, but appealing. We accept that because what choice is there, really? Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just nostalgic and cranky. I'm dealing with this existential crisis of realizing my own obsolescence. Not planned. Not today. I feel okay. I know it's inevitable, folks, and I'd like to just limit their ability to run money through my rudderless soul at every phase of my decay. How's that? If you need me later, I'll be sitting in my antique Swedish modern chair, surrounded by broken things, being bitter. That's my brain skid for today. What's that? I lost all the IKEA wrenches. The table's wobbling. But what's worse about it is it's literally, I know in my head, I really don't like to buy anything because I just think it's going to be, what's the point if I can imagine having the fun? But because of that, you know, I don't even have an air conditioner in my bedroom, which is stupid. So what, do I got to punish myself? I spent 3 summers thinking I had malaria until I got a fan. I'm sitting there like, I got a fever. I think I'm sick. No, it's 90 degrees and it's humid. But I don't know why I talk myself out of stuff. I should just treat myself. But the Allen wrench, it'll work with some of the stuff, but some of the stuff is just broken for good. What the hell can I tell you? So let's talk about this before we run out of time in this particular bit, and we have some guests coming up. 20 months before 9/11, a CIA official blocked a memo intended to alert the FBI that 2 known al-Qaeda operatives had entered the country. If the FBI had received the memo from the CIA Special Osama Unit when it was ready in January 2000, its agents probably could have tracked down the men. The 2 men ended up being 2 of the 19 hijackers on 9/11. This information was in a Justice Department report that officials involved in the Moussaoui case were trying to suppress. The memo was written by an FBI agent on assignment to the CIA Special Bin Laden Unit. Now, there's the case right there. I mean, much of the basic information in this report is not new, but the report's conclusion that an agent had written a memo specifically designed for transmittal to the FBI to alert the Bureau of the men's presence and that a supervisor deliberately prevented it from being sent is new. Now, this is ridiculous. I mean, you've got a guy, this guy is an FBI agent who's on loan to the CIA, finds out this information, says, hey, dudes, I think this is important. And the CIA goes, who do you think you are, Mr. FBI guy? We're going to sit on that. And then this happens, and these guys end up being part of this terrorist team. And this kind of, you know, bureaucratic infighting, happened all the time. But now the CIA has been, you know, neutered, and it's just they're sort of retooling it with Porter Goss to make it an efficient, you know, information gathering bureaucracy for the Bush administration to efficiently deceive the people. And I guess John Negroponte is now the neocon death cult's intelligence czar. Yeah, well, this all frightens me on a day-to-day basis, but I still say that, you know, when in doubt, blame Bush for everything. Is that all right? I mean, I don't think that's childish. I just decided that, you know, where's those T-shirts? Where are the blame Bush T-shirts? Yeah, blame Bush now. Blame Bush for everything. You know, I'm a little unhappy. I'm slightly depressed today. Why not blame Bush? There's a real good chance that if I did a decent personal inventory, that he would be 1 or 2 up there. Yes, the Ashes of Evil on the T-shirt here. That's a fine T-shirt. One thing about liberals, there's never a shortage of T-shirts. Right lies. Yes, that's a good one. And those T-shirts are making an impact today on me because I can see them from where I'm standing. We have Fred and Nancy Bass coming up, the owners of the Strand Bookstore, going to give us the history of the bookstore. We are here live at the Strand Bookstore on 12th and Broadway here in New York City. We got free coffee. We have fun. We got people. We have 18 miles of books. So all that coming up next here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. I am Mark Maron. Mark Riley is on his way to Disney World with his family. We are broadcasting live from New York's famous Strand Bookstore at the corner of 12th and Broadway. We're giving away coffee and prizes. Come on down and see us. Hang out. We're giving away coffee. That's the catch here. I think that if people keep drinking this mud truck coffee, prizes are going to be irrelevant. Irrelevant. Irrelevant? What is that, a word? Irrelevant? See, it's already happening to me. I've had half of that cup of coffee, and my brainstem is detaching from my ability to reason here. Not that it was ever that well connected. I've been starting to hallucinate. Is that right with coffee? You're not supposed to have that with coffee. Yeah, exactly. We got Rich in the front row with his New York Yankees T-shirt on. We got a couple of people with the Ashes of Evil T-shirts. People speak their minds. What's that, sir? Your Ashes of Evil T-shirt? These are progressive people, my friends, here in the audience. T-shirts mean power. That's what... Man, you know what would really change the world? A good slogan. If I could just think of a good slogan, that would make a difference. Hey, folks, my therapist asked me to write down my dreams, so here's one from last night. I'm here at the Strand Bookstore doing this show when my dead cat Butch comes in with her cat army. She jumps on the table and lights a cigarette and says, I say, hey, Butch, I'm working here. Not anymore, Mark Maron. Give me the mic. Hello, Strand. Welcome to Butch's Book Club. Butch puts on a pair of half glasses and says, today's reading will be from Henry Miller's Tropic of Cancer. The physiology of love. The whale with his 6-foot penis in repose. The bat, penis libre. Animals with a bone in the penis. I say, whoa, Butch, why don't we read something else? How would that be? She says, very well, Mr. Bourgeois Censor. I will now read to you from William S. Burroughs' Naked Lunch. You know how old people lose all shame about eating and it makes you puke to watch them? Old junkies are the same about junk. The gibber and squeal at the sight of it. The spit hangs off their chin and their stomach rumbles and all their guts grind in peristalsis while they cook up, dissolving the body's decent skin. You expect at any moment a great glob of protoplasm will flop right out and surround the junk. I said, dude, Butch, please. It's a little early for the junky protoplasm stuff. Am I wrong? Some of these people haven't even eaten yet. Butch says, you are squeamish, Mark Maron, but I will indulge your delicate sensibilities and read something else from the Marquis de Sade's 100 Days of Sodom. I burst into tears and fall down at the Marquis' feet, but nothing would bend him. And as I was not quick enough in undressing, he himself tore my clothes off, ripping them away by sheer force. But what truly petrified me was to see him throw away one after another into the fire. Ah, exquisite, isn't it? All around us, the cat army begin yowling and humping. Butch says, now I want all of you to take paper and pen and write about what you see here. With any luck, your book will be banned by the man. Make it extra dirty, people. I love details. I woke up and my bed was filled with uncorrected proofs. There you go. Now I got that coffee sweat going. Now it's happening. We're starting to sweat, starting to beat up. But I want to talk about this a little bit before we get into our next guest. Advocates of embryonic stem cell research from the fields of academia, politics, healthcare, and medicine, including the South Korean cloning pioneer Hwang Woo-suk. Yeah. Brendan P.W. McDowell, big fan of Hwang Woo-suk, if by just virtue of his name. Yeah, I don't want to make fun, but come on. That's a funny name, folks. Come on. Yeah. All right. Hwang Woo-suk, all right. So I'm 7 inside. What do you want from me? But Hwang Woo-suk was actually the first guy to take DNA from a person. Like, if I wanted to clone Rich here and his New York Yankees shirt, I could take a little DNA from your arm and insert it into another cell, into an egg somehow, and make a little bit of you. And then if something was giving out, say your organ or your kidney or your organ, that was general, your heart. Your lung? I could just build one in a dish. It's brilliant stuff. But all these people are meeting in Texas, of all places, at the Texas Medical Center, which is intentional. They are literally getting together in Texas, and here's a weird thing, at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy at Rice University, who is subsidizing this. But this is one of those weird conundrums, is that here's James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy at Rice University and Baylor Medical Center are supporting this stem cell research. Because why? There's money to be made. And I've always believed that, even when you have somebody like George Bush, I believe that true Republicans actually believe in evolution because they're absolutely sure the poor will adapt to whatever they put them through. Now, I believe that what's happening here is that is just a schism of the way George Bush and this administration panders to the religious right. I believe that the unborn for the religious right, the Christo-fascist zombie brigade. I was thinking about this because I'm reading Robert Paxton's book, The Anatomy of Fascism. And in the same way that the Nazis sort of held up the Aryan ideal as a means for momentum in their movement, I think that the Christo-fascist zombie brigade holds up the unborn in the same way as a way to sort of mobilize in a mythic proportion the future towards the future. And what this does in my head is stifle progress, it stifles science, and, what do they want to make the roads dirt again? I mean, I just don't know how far we're going to, go back. I mean, these are people that, will deny their own children a fact-based education. Today, there's a zoo in Oklahoma City that is now, they've decided, the city council has decided they're going to have a creationism exhibit at the zoo. I guess if they really had their way, there wouldn't be any other signs. Just God did this. Enjoy. I mean, isn't a zoological park supposed to be for this study? That's in Tulsa. I'm sorry, in Tulsa. I want to get my facts right. I just started rambling on there. But I do believe this is progress, but I believe there's still, in terms of the stem cell advocates, in terms of the Bush administration, they're unwilling to admit that this is going to be not only a lucrative area of research, but an essential area of research. And ultimately, I don't know if they're going to be able to actually do this all behind the religious rights backs, but maybe it should just come down to a preference. It's like, look, if you don't want important scientific advances to help you live your life more effectively and not get cancer or have things inside of you rot because you believe God will save you and take you to the other place where you can fly, well, then you go ahead. But if you don't mind, those of us who want to move forward and be rational are going to go ahead and do this over here. How would that be? Now, to help us sort out some of the controversy surrounding stem cell research and the upcoming vote in Congress, we have a special guest. Sammy the Stem Cell is here.
I'm Sammy the Stem Cell.
Oh, wow. Thanks for coming, Sammy. It's good to see you. When you visited last
week. Hey, wait a second. It's Mr. Stem Cell, right?
Joseph.
We'll try that again, all right? It's Mr. Stem Cell. Hey, show me some respect. Tom DeLay said I'm a unique, integrated human person, so put that in your Rolodex. Crash killer?
Hey, take it easy. All right, Mr. Stem Cell. Now, what do you think of the amazing news from Korea that the researchers have successfully treated brain-damaged stroke victims with stem cells? Hey, did you just call me a Christ killer?
Yeah, that's right. By the way, aren't you a little old to be dressing like a skate punk?
Hey, come on, man.
Hey, old man, you know what? Your Indian name should be Losak.
Come on, no. Hey,
follow me?
Dude, that's disgusting. I just don't get it. Don't you understand the potential you have to do good for our world, Sammy?
Sorry, I wasn't listening. Too busy staring at that huge wart on your neck. Oh, sorry, that's your head.
That's terrible. You're sickening, man. You're disgusting.
Yeah, and you're welcome. You kale-munching recovery hippie.
Shut up. Don't you care about people, man?
Yeah, what's the real people, all right? You think you're so special? You know who's going to be left over when you guys are gone?
Yeah.
Stem cells. Uh-huh. Cells are going to be everywhere. You just wait. By the way, I did your wife.
Hey, what are you talking about? You did what?
Yeah.
Your son.
Hey, I'm life, and she knows it. Oh, man, does she ever know it? You know what? She loves researching my stem.
Hey. Have you no sense of decency, Sammy?
I don't know. Let me look in my pockets. Oh, here it is.
Oh, man. Flipping me off. That's great. All right.
Flipping the finger.
All right.
Yeah, I'm doing it.
Okay. All right, buddy. I get it. You know what? You should be killed.
You know what? You can't kill me.
Yeah, I can.
You can't kill me. I can't. And kill me. You know, we've got to rehearse this.
You're scaring me, man. Why don't you just get out of here? How would that be?
Well, why don't you just off?
Hey, you
yeah,
hole.
Right back at you, hole. The horse you rode in on.
All right, buddy.
I'll see you at Go Bananas, buddy.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, man. Oh, boy. Yeah, okay. All right. We will, come on, man. We're going to be back. We're going to talk to Nancy. No, I think Nancy's not here. She's en route. But Fred Bass, the owner of the Strand Bookstore, will be with us to talk about the evolution of the Strand and how it's competing well against the big, nasty Barnes & Noble. All right. With Air America Radio, we're here live at the Strand. We'll be back. Well, coming up next, we're going to have the owner of the Strand.
This is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend, Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition. Mark Riley is on his way to Florida. We are broadcasting live from New York City's famous Strand Bookstore at the corner of 12th and Broadway. We've got the mud truck coffee going. I'm white. I'm whacked. I'm wasted. This is the only joy I have, ice cream and coffee. You know what? Actually, I had a Haagen-Dazs hangover, and this is helping, the coffee. You can't plow through a pint of Haagen-Dazs and feel good about yourself, especially in this humidity. But it felt good at the time, didn't it? It's good fun. Anyway, so if you want to come down, we're at 12th and Broadway. We're on the second floor. We got the Mud Truck Coffee. Awesome. We're at the Strand Bookstore, which is great. And they got a whole new floor here. If you haven't been here in a while, I swear to God, I felt like I was here a couple of weeks ago and this whole floor wasn't here. When did this happen? Did it happen pretty recently?
Well,
yeah.
we opened it up in December and fully in January.
All right, well, that's that voice that you don't recognize from our show is Fred Bass. We're going to talk to Fred and Nancy Bass, who own the Strand Bookstore. According to the American Booksellers Association, the number of independent bookstores in the United States has fallen from 4,700 in 1993 to about 2,000 last year, and yet the Strand Bookstore continues to thrive. The Strand likes to boast that it used to be 8 miles and now it's 18. Okay, so I'm not crazy. All right. These guys are making me feel stupid. It is now 18 miles of books. Since I was a kid, they've added 10 miles. You can find a book here for the bargain price of 48 cents or the monster price of $125,000. I'd like to see that book, Fred. Can we bring that down? We are joined live at the Strand by Fred and Nancy Bass, the father and daughter team who are behind the operation. Good morning, you guys. Thanks for being here. Thank you for letting us be here. That's the real thing. Yep, thank you. Got to be here. Thanks for coming down to your store to talk to us.
We're thrilled.
We think it's an honor to have you here.
Well, I've loved this place for so long, and I've been here. I used to come here when I was a little kid. So why don't you give us a sense of the history? You know, how long has the Strand actually been around?
The Strand was founded by my grandfather in 1927 in an area just located around the corner on 4th Avenue called Book Row.
There was a Book Row?
Yes. And at its height, it started in 1860, and it ran to about 1970. At its height, there were about 48 antiquarian and used bookstores, and we moved around the corner, and today Strand is the sole survivor from those days.
Yeah. This is the evolution of the perfect independent bookstore. I mean, this place is unbelievable, and now there's a Barnes & Noble, like, just around the corner. There's one on every corner. See, look, you know,
I love this, Brad. I love your audience.
I mean,
yeah.
Barnes & Noble, I mean, literally, you know, you walk into this place and it feels like a real place. It feels like it has integrity. It feels like there's a history here. It feels like there's a respect for the books. You walk into Barnes & Noble and no one knows where anything is. They all look the same. They've only got books that they want you to buy. Their bargain books aren't even interesting. Here you go to the bargain bin. It's like, wow, you can really find stuff. You can spend 2 hours. So how do you compete with these people? Were you mad? You were mad. Come on, little man.
Well, I think you're right. It's the Barnes & Noble is just so homogeneous. I mean, if you're in Des Moines and Chicago, it's the same kind of store. And I think it's kind of scary with the consolidation of all the power with media companies and publishing companies and bookstore chains and the three bookstore chains, Barnes & Nobles and Borders and Books A Million. I don't know, they all begin with a B, too.
So. Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, we've got to look into that B thing. I'm sure there's someone in the audience that would be like, yes, the numerology and the alphabetology match up to mean that the Antichrist. All right, anyway.
So I think, you know, independence is important to keep with, you know, having people have choices and you know, what we stock. We stock antiquarian books. We have out-of-print books.
Mm-hmm.
We carry full lines of publishers' books.
It's unbelievable, too. Like downstairs, literally, I'm telling you the truth. I've gone through those paperback racks of the books that are half-priced, and I found so many books that you would never see. You don't even you find books in there, you're like, what does this even mean, this book? I have found strange religious texts, like, you know, self-published stuff. Where does that stuff come from? When I found a self-published strange book by some, you know, Christian/Zionist, weird book. I mean, that just obviously just got there. Where did those books come from?
Well, we buy big collections of books.
Okay.
Big closeouts. Mm-hmm. We buy a lot of reviewers' copies, and practically every book that's published, we get copies sent to us. They're sent actually from a publisher to reviewers or magazines.
Uh-huh.
We buy them up then.
Now, you have a book that's worth $125,000. Was that a book that you found in one of these big buys? You're like, oh, my God.
No, that particular book we bought.
You did?
Somebody had it.
What book is that? I know what book it is.
It's the second folio of Shakespeare.
I have that book. No, I'm kidding. So it's the second folio of Shakespeare from what year?
1632. It's the second printing of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
It's located one floor up. We can bring it down. It's in our gold vault in our rare book department.
Oh, right. We just put that out to the entire city of New York. So if you happen to be a criminal who's just wandering down the street, apparently the book is coming down that's worth as much as the Gutenberg Bible. So we have a big security here. We have one guy. But Neil's doing a good job. Watch my back. He is. So let's Yeah. All right, so look. Now, most people might not know this, but here at the Strand, prospective employees have to take a quiz to prove their knowledge about literature. This is true, right?
True.
Yeah? And some of the questions, like we've got one of the old quizzes from you guys, and it's got a list of books like Gulliver's Travels, Catch-22, Lives of the Painters, Voyage of the Beagle, and you have to provide the author. That's pretty much the extent of it. So how do people usually do on the test?
Well, they have to do very well to be employed here, which
really?
Is great because they can recommend books to customers, and a lot of our readers come back to the same employees for advice.
Oh, so they develop relationships.
Mm-hmm.
The people that come and spend 5 hours at the Strand Bookstore looking for the book can now go, hey, buddy, how are you? I've spent hours in here. You know?
Did you notice on that list that there's a mistake?
What's the mistake? I'm no genius, believe me.
We usually have, it's a matching test, and we usually have one author that doesn't match with the title, and we want to see if the employee will speak up about that.
So there goes my gig after I lose this job. Well, we actually got someone to secretly give us a copy of the new test you're going to start using. I want to see how tough it is. We're going to read some questions from it. If anyone here knows the answer, just shout them out. Okay, when a female college student asks if you have a copy of The Fountainhead, do you A, roll your eyes, B, snicker, or C, run? That's good. You got some perspective in boys here. Can you resist making a smart-ass comment if someone asks for help finding the self-help section? When someone asks for a copy of Everything is Illuminated, do you say, oh, that book changed my life, or that'll be in the overwritten crap aisle? When you see a homely girl walk into the store, do you just go ahead and hand her a copy of He's Just Not That Into You?
Oh, sorry.
Some bitter writers sometimes. If someone came to the counter with a copy, oh, no, I already did that. Oh, yeah, here we go. If someone came to the counter with a copy of the brilliant book, The Jerusalem Syndrome, would you point to me and say, see that gorgeous creature right there over there? He wrote it. Yeah. Okay. When you see a homely girl walk into the store, do you just go ahead and hand her a copy of The Jerusalem Syndrome? It's my book. Do you allow lonely goth girls to sit cross-legged and block the aisles in the graphic novel section? What happened to my computer? Where are we at here? But I do want to thank you for letting us be here, and I do want to invite everyone down to see the gorgeous new Strand Bookstore. What's the second most expensive book that you have in there upstairs?
I think we have a James Joyce's Ulysses in the limited editions, signed by both James Joyce and Matisse.
Really?
Illustrated by Matisse, yeah.
Which makes it even more cryptic and understandable.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
I'm still working on Ulysses.
Sure.
I've got past the first two pages. So James Joyce signed it too. Okay, so what else do we need to cover here? I've lost touch in my head. Oh, yeah, we got to go.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. Good morning, America. Good morning, New York. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Strand Bookstore here at the corner of 12th and Broadway. We've got Mud Truck Coffee. These people are uncontrollable. They are jacked up on highly caffeinated coffee from the Mud Truck. It is crazy, this coffee. Yeah, so come down. We're up on the second floor, the beautiful new second floor of the Strand. A little bit of information. We're going to be talking to C. Virginia Fields, Manhattan Borough President, in just a few minutes. She's running for mayor of New York. A little bit of news, though, ramping up for the Puerto Rican Day Parade. Census Bureau report issued Thursday said Hispanics accounted for half the 2.9 million U.S. population growth from 2003 to 2004 and now constitute one-seventh of all people in the United States. You're winning. The Puerto Rican Day Parade in New York is quite an exciting event everywhere. All right, our guest is one of the leading four mayoral candidates seeking the Democratic nomination to run against Mayor Bloomberg. She's currently Manhattan Borough President. The Democratic primary is September 13, 2005. Winner will face Republican Mayor Michael Bloomberg on Election Day, November 8th. Please welcome C. Virginia Fields.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Borough President.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming down.
First of all, I don't need the coffee with all of this energy. It is just so invigorating. I mean, you all do it.
Oh, with the coffee and that energy? By the end of this interview, you're going to be like, wow. So on your website, the slogan says, let New York be New York again. Now, what makes you think or say that New York isn't quite what it should be now?
Well, of course, as I move into this campaign and look at the priorities that are face our daily lives and the lack of response to them by this mayor, It is about New York. It's still about opportunities. It is about hope. It is about dreams being realized through a variety of ways. First of all, being able to afford to live here.
Yeah, right.
Affordable housing has gone through the roof. When we look at one out of every five New Yorkers paying 50% or more of their income in for rent, and the majority of this are people at the lower socioeconomic level, working people, and when you add other living expenses that we all have, that is overwhelming. So it is about affordable housing. It is about jobs.
I'm amazed. Like, I don't know how the hell people afford these places in New York anymore. I mean, you know, who's living here? I mean, I moved out to Queens. I know that very few working people can afford to live in this city anymore.
And here in Manhattan, There was a recent report, I think, earlier this week that talked about the costs continuing to rise. And we want people to be able to live here. Now, I came to New York in 1971. I was not born here. After receiving my graduate degree in social work from Indiana University, I moved here, was able to find housing, be able to live here, and afford the rent. Younger people looking to come now, it is extremely difficult. Or those who would like to leave, from their parents' home, Not able to do it as quickly. So building affordable housing, New York is about opportunities at every level, and they are quickly evading us, moving away.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that it is important that we focus on that. And jobs, as I said. When we continue to hear statistics as to 50% or so of African-American men, 40% or so of Latino men and women who are unemployed, and they become like part of the chronically unemployed group, whether we are experiencing prosperity or not.
What are some of your ideas for some of those jobs here?
One of the things that we've talked about, and I have said it among my priorities within the mayor's office, is to have a position that I would call deputy mayor for full employment. Some people like to call it a job czar. Whatever you call it, it's less important as the function.
You'll actually have like 50,000 people working there.
Right, okay. This is the title is less important as it is the function.
Uh-huh.
The function will be to coordinate all of the relevant entities that must be a part of creating jobs. It is government. It's the private sector. It's businesses. It's the not-for-profit. It's the religious institutions, community-based organizations. But also it is the Department of Education and CUNY.
Mm-hmm.
We must focus on how we are preparing the next generation in terms of them they being the workforce as we move forward. What kind of career paths can we create beginning in high school, preparing them so that they are ready to take their place? And the reality is many of the students by choice or chance might not go on to college. Let's expand the vocational and technical programs in the school.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So that the next group of plumbers, electricians, people who can, you know, get jobs in terms of good income to provide for themselves. Let's look at areas of growth where we need people. We often hear talk about a shortage of nursing.
Yeah.
Why not have nursing schools in more of our high schools as programs beginning there, and a seamless transition so that those who wish to move into nursing as a career, we have a program at City University, and it is a seamless transition.
Madam Borough President, we have some questions from the audience. I think that from New Yorkers here in the audience that we'd like to address to see what you think about those. Go ahead, Jonathan.
First up, we have Harold Kramer. He's He's from Jackson Heights. He owns a Raven Bar here in Manhattan. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, good morning, Madam President.
Good morning.
Good morning. Last year, Mayor Bloomberg tried to shut the bars and clubs down at 1 a.m. under the guise of doing away with the cabaret laws, which was just a ruse. If you're elected mayor, what time will you let us stay open till?
How late are you open now?
4 a.m.
Keep doing it.
Yeah. Open for you. Our guest is C. Virginia Fields, Manhattan Borough
President. You know, there is some magic, too, about New York, and a great deal of that is our nightlife.
That's for sure.
I guess I'm in so many other cities from time to time, as I'm sure you are, and you want to go out, you know,
for
a drink, a glass of wine, whatever. 12:30, you cannot find one place open. No, I think there's value to that. The nightlife establishment adds to the vibrancy and the energy in this city.
That's
and to close New York down at 1 o'clock is not New York anymore. It's something else.
Yeah. That's part of the great thing about New York. You never say, what do you mean it's closed? You can't get a drink anywhere?
We got another question.
Next up, we have Andy Romanelli, who lives pretty much next door. Right, Andy?
He wants us all to leave. Thanks for waking me up, man.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a New York City public school teacher, so I definitely appreciate the free coffee here. I just wanted to know what you would do to get teachers a contract, and would Joel Klein be part of that?
Well, first of all, in terms of the contract, we know that teachers have been without a contract here in New York City now for 3 years. And I began with a commitment and goodwill and will provide the leadership to bring the union to the table, because we cannot expect any changes if we are not talking to each other. And I understand that contract discussions and negotiations have broken down for almost a year now. So the first step, let's come to the table, and as a mayor, I would be committed to bringing UFT to the table, and let's begin the conversation so that we can get to a contract. We know that it is a process of negotiation. Mm-hmm. I'm a former chapter chairperson for 1707, and when I worked in my field as a social worker, so that I know the process that it involves, and that's where we began. And obviously both of us bring things to the table that we want, and you work it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is important, because we need to look at certain efficiencies that can only be achieved by working through our contract. So let's start there. Okay. I believe in fair wages, and I certainly believe that teachers deserve a salary increase, and I think that we need to be supportive of that. As we ask teachers to do what we want them to do in terms of helping to educate all of the children in the public schools.
Absolutely. C. Virginia Fields, Manhattan Borough President, is our guest. She's running for mayor. I guess I want to do this in a yes or no way. Are you happy about the decision on the stadium, the West Side?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for joining us so much, Madam Borough President. I really appreciate it. If you want to go to her site, it's NewYorkers4Fields.com. That's NewYorkers4Fields.com. C. Virginia Fields, it was a pleasure having you on the show today. Thank you so much.
But just let me add one thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
About the stadium, I don't want to just leave it with a yes, because 3.5 years ago, I presented a vision and a plan for the West Side.
Uh-huh.
Which calls for expansion of the Javits Center, commercial, retail, open space, but affordable housing at every level. So instead of a stadium over the rail yard, we call for housing and began to address the needs of people again in this city. Thank you so much. Keep up the energy.
Running for mayor.
Thank you.
Democratic primary September 13th. Thank you, Madam Borough President, again. We will be back with comedian Jim David. We're here live at the Strand Bookstore in New York City on Broadway and 12th. This is Air America Radio at 16 past the hour.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
One past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Morning Tradition on Air America Radio.
We're broadcasting live from New York's famous Grand Bookstore at the corner of 12th and Broadway. We're up on the second floor. We're giving away Mud Truck Coffee and the New York Observer. So you can get all jammed up and read about what's going on in the city. Mark Reilly is on his way to Disney World. He might be there right now. He'll be back on, next week he'll be back on Wednesday. He went down with the family to enjoy Disney World. I hope he has a good time. He was a little panicky yesterday.
Yeah, hey, Maren.
Yeah, what's up?
Maren, I can't believe it, but I see over hiding behind the bookshelf over there that guy who calls into the show sometimes. He's always talking about the revolution. I don't know. He's from that group Teabag or Balls or whatever it was called. I don't know. Do you want him to talk?
Let's have him sit down. Hey, man. So you're back. Are you here in business or...
No, Mark, I did not know you were taping here today, but since I'm here, I suppose I should get the word out about...
Come on, you guys, you want to hear it, don't you? You know you want to hear him say it.
About the revolution!
All right, there you go. You feel better, buddy?
Yes, Mark, I'm actually here at the Strand today picking up some postcards featuring my hero, Che Guevara.
Oh, really? That's great, man.
$14.95, a little pricey for postcards.
But that's good. You're finally thinking like a revolutionary, man.
Yes, I recently watched The Motorcycle Diaries, which is about Che. I figured that out halfway through. And I decided that perhaps it was my time to go on a personal vision quest to find the soul of the revolutionary within.
You got fired from Lady Footlocker, didn't you?
I don't want to talk about it, but I have applications in at Elaine Bryant's, and I'm considering an offer from Hickory Farms, though I am lactose intolerant.
All right, so I would have guessed that. So tell us more about the revolutionary vision quest of yours, man. I mean, I suppose you modeled it after Che's. Did it by any chance involve you leaving your apartment?
Oh, yes, Mark. I dusted off my hog.
Your hog?
It's a Schwinn. Motorcycles frighten stompers.
Your Shih Tzu.
Who cannot be left alone.
All right, go ahead.
I put stompers in the handlebar basket and pedaled off into the horizon, not knowing where the day would take me.
That sounds great, man. So where'd you end up?
Union City, New Jersey, Mark.
Oh.
That is where my Cuban hermanos live.
Oh.
Union City is La Corazon de la Revolucion.
Oh, so that's great. You speak Spanish.
No, Mark, just those four words and hermanos.
Oh, okay.
And all the words on a menu from Fresco Tortilla. But I didn't need to speak Spanish, for my Latin American revolutionary brothers and I spoke the international language of struggle. Viva la Revolucion!
All right, so they just accepted you just like that?
See, Mark. They embraced me and even gave me a name.
Okay.
Everywhere I went, I smiled and waved at them, and they called me Maricón.
Oh, God. All right, Maricón, huh?
Yes, I like it, too. Very patriotic. Maricón.
Yeah, okay. So were they able to inspire you, pump some life into your little liberal revolution?
Oh, yes, Mark. In fact, much like Che, I've become sort of a folk hero for them.
Oh, really? Yeah?
Yes, and as I spend more time with them, they have ascribed revolutionary slogans to me, like El Dumas Mas Grande en El Mundo. And pendejo.
Oh, buddy, I'm pretty sure pendejo means idiot.
No, I'm afraid you're wrong, Mark. They said it meant warrior. In fact, I got a pendejo tattoo right here. This is for La Raza.
Wow, man. Okay, a tattoo. So I guess you truly are a pendejo.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much. It gave me, hermano, so much joy watching me get this tattoo. They laughed and laughed.
So you did your vision quest, you got your tattoo, you learned a few words, so now are you going to put the revolution in motion?
Yes, with a brand new group name, also given to me in El Barrio.
Okay, so lay it on me.
The People's Underground Threat Alliance.
Puta?
Si, Mark, puta! So who's with me? Are there any putas in the audience today?
Oh, whoa! You gotta
puta,
stop it. You gotta
puta,
stop it. Here, turn
puta,
his mic off. Can someone from the Strand get him a Spanish to English dictionary right now, please? Please. Get him a Spanish to English dictionary. I'm begging you. Okay, that was Pendejo. Who is the proud leader of Puta.
Come on.
Revolution.
So we've got Jim David, comedian Jim David's going to be here in a few minutes. We've got Eric Bogosian coming up.
Yeah!
And I believe Cardinal Milfington will be making an appearance. Oh, man. I guess I should read this again in honor of our revolutionary friend. A Census Bureau report issued Thursday said Hispanics accounted for half the 2.9 million U.S. population growth from 2003 to 2004 and now constitute 1/7 of all people in the United States. The trend probably will continue because of immigration and Hispanic birth rate outstripping non-Hispanic blacks and whites. I want to thank Melissa for the beautiful cookies you baked. Also, Alyssa is here, who made me a dream diary with an embroidered butch on the cover. Thank you for sending that in the mail. We'll be back with Eric Bogosian, Jim David, all that coming up next. This is Air America at the Strand Bookstore. I'm Mark Maron.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're broadcasting live from the Strand Bookstore here in Manhattan, 12th and Broadway, up on the second floor. Mark Riley en route to Disney World. I'll tell you, Riley, if you're on the way to the airport, my friend, you're missing a party, my friend. This is Disney World. I get literally this mud truck coffee. I can hear the people's brains humming from where I'm standing right now. It's unbelievable. In a few minutes, did I just say unbelievable? I just said that, didn't I?
Unbelievable.
That's Jim David. I'm going to introduce you in a second. Let me do some business. In a minute, we've got Cardinal Milfington's going to be out here. I know a lot of fans of the Cardinal are here. We're going to be giving away a ticket to see me in New Jersey, Jim.
At Bananas Comedy Club. Bananas Comedy Club is the only comedy club in America you can fit in the car.
Really?
Yeah, because you know, they decorate the room in the hotel with the banana.
That's Jim David, folks.
Hello,
he's a regular
everybody
on Comedy Central.
Hello, everybody.
Performs in comedy clubs all over the world.
Clubs of
he's now also doing columns for The Advocate. Congratulations
right
on that,
you
kid. So I've never been to Bananas. I've never been there.
You've never been to Bananas?
I've never been to Bananas.
Well, you've been to New Jersey.
Yes, I have been
to
New Jersey.
All right, so put two and two together.
Hey, wait a minute.
New Jersey in a hotel with a banana on the wall.
I think you're discouraging some people.
No, it's great. It's a great room.
We're going to give away tickets.
I go to Bananas twice a year. I have a good time. Harlan and Arlene Jameson run it. They're lovely, lovely people.
I
make fun of them all the time.
Okay, good.
You know, if that didn't kiss an ass, I don't know what is.
But we are going to give away tickets. I'm going to be there on June 25th for a couple of shows. So, Jim, it's nice to see you.
Hey, Mark.
You live around the corner.
I live right up around the corner. Everybody, welcome to my neighborhood bookstore. Did he just drag you guys off the street?
Yes, I did.
This is New York, man. They are desperate for entertainment 24 hours a day, man.
I don't think Rich has slipped in a few days.
You can find an audience in this town. Hey, you want to come to a show? Yeah.
What the hell? Remember, you used to have to do that. They do that in front of Boston Comedy Club.
I know. Rest in peace.
Right,
it's gone.
Thank God on some level.
Thank God, really.
So what have you been up to, man?
I've just got back from performing at the Akron, Ohio Home Depot Caulking Conference. I performed at the Bob's Big Boy Clean Colon Festival.
Really? Sounds great.
Yes, I performed at a hospital benefit, and I followed a quadriplegic who sang, "You'll Never Walk Alone." My career has taken off.
Tough crowd, folks.
You're thinking I'm
making
that's
a tough
up
crowd. Am I right, Jim?
They think I'm making that up, but I'm not making that up.
So,
I got back. I was in the Galapagos Islands, Mark.
Were you there studying evolution?
No, I was. Well, I was swimming with the sea lions.
That's kind of studying.
And I
evolution
was watching two gay male giant tortoises try to fellate each other.
Well, let me ask you something. Was this some sort of weird travel screw up? Did you wind
no,
up at the
I
wrong
went
gay club?
No, I went. Actually, yeah, it was at the wrong gay club. I got to see tortoises.
Exactly.
It was really cool. You know what? I learned something in the Galapagos. Those it's this whole park where in Ecuador, the whole government of Ecuador is protected. Mm-hmm. So there's all these uninhabited islands where there's nothing but tortoises and sea lions and sea turtles and iguanas and blue-footed boobies.
Uh-huh.
And they're not afraid of you.
Yeah, but, well, that's where Darwin had the big revelation.
I know.
That,
and then we saw, you know, the first graffiti that was written after Darwin left, which said, "It's only a theory."
Only a theory.
Right. Hey, I'm glad this audience got that. That's right.
Of course you're going to get
smart. Of course you're going to get a smart at the Strand bookstore at 7 in the morning. A smart audience.
At the Tulsa Zoo yesterday, the city council members agreed to put a sign, a plaque at the zoo that
says it's only a theory.
No, that says it's about creationism. Isn't that ridiculous?
You
and
gotta
that's
be
their
kidding
only
me.
That's their only defense, man. That's their only defense. It's like it's just a theory. It doesn't explain everything, which means there must be a divine creator. Isn't that sort of like saying I don't understand it?
I know.
It must not be
only
magic.
That, and not only that, it's like the intelligent design theory has absolutely no basis in any science whatsoever. It proves nothing. It, you know, all it says was God did it.
Yeah,
or somebody did it.
You know what's amazing
to
me? That if you're a kid and you have this option, like if your parents give you the option of intelligent design over actually doing homework, wouldn't you sort of go like, oh, sure, I'll do the God thing. Yeah, all right, the God thing's all right. So I don't have to do homework.
That's right. You
that's
know,
how they retard their children. They religiously retard their children.
Hey, you know, forget plankton.
Yeah,
exactly. Forget zygotes.
Hey, just say God did
it. God did it.
It's magic.
And you know what? You know what? That's also so funny about abstinence-only education. It's like they're spending how many millions and millions of dollars on abstinence-only?
Yeah.
And like, how much can you teach? You know, for an abstinence-only class, hi, don't do it. Good morning. That's our lesson today. Keep it in your pants. Thank you. Tomorrow, we'll learn how to not do it.
Right, but the teaching part is like, oh, yeah, and be scared of it.
Oh, I know.
Scared.
But you know what? This is one thing that I actually had a spiritual moment in the Galapagos Islands. Because
these animals
are not afraid of you because they haven't been taught.
Right.
So, in other words, you can go up and swim with this. I mean, it's so weird because you're swimming right next to freaking sea lions. Like, right up in your face, like a dog.
Have you had no problem with that?
I had no problem, but I was amazed that they had no problem with us being there because you feel like you're in there. And it's like, these animals have not been taught fear. You know what I mean?
Right.
They haven't been. Nobody's taught them fear.
Unlike me.
And what? You're a Northern Jew, so you've been taught a lot of fear.
Yeah. A Northeastern Jew.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Northeastern.
I'm not a Montana Jew. They have Montana.
That's right.
Jews.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes. They do. There's a few. Bob Dylan.
Right. And they have Midwestern.
I think
Jews.
It was Minnesota.
They have Midwestern anti-gay people are called Oklahomophobes.
Really?
But folks. Well, I'll be here all morning. But I just thought these animals have not been taught fear, and that's why they're not afraid. And so it's like, as long as we're not taught to be afraid of something, we're not afraid of it, which is why the whole thing that Bush is trying to do and all they're trying to make us continually afraid and trying to... Every day you see something on, you know, Fox News, which is... I love tuning into Fox News just to see what... propaganda passes for news every day.
Sure, absolutely.
Just the subtle way that they report the news on Fox, you know?
Report?
Former President Bill Clinton is recovering from open-heart surgery. The serial rapist and perpetual liar is resting comfortably at his home in Chappaqua, New York, which searches solely so that his wife could assume her position as queen of the damned. Now the weather. But, I mean, you know, it's like, why be afraid? If you just say, I'm not afraid of you people.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid of the propaganda and the nonsense that you throw out at me.
Yeah.
It was just, I learned this from the sea lions in the Galapagos Islands.
Oh, it's beautiful.
They taught me.
And
how appropriate that I make that revelation at the Strand bookstore, 18 miles of books.
I want to know. Hey, let me ask you something. Were any of the sea lions like people from other countries when you visit abroad and they come up to you and go, hey, man, what's with Bush?
Bush is bad.
I know. They all do. The people in the other countries, because I've traveled a whole lot in the last year. I've been to Europe twice, and I've been to Australia, and I've been to, you know, everywhere I go, everybody in every country.
What's going on? Are you okay?
They're all quick to say, we like you, we like Americans.
Yeah.
But we don't like what's going on. It's just
and then they go, wait, let me take that back. Who'd you vote for?
Huh?
Then they say that the Europeans is like, wait, I don't even know. We didn't even talk in depth about it.
Or what they'll say is they'll say, I don't want to get into politics, but are you crazy? Are you out of mind? You know?
They all do that. And I'm like so tired of trying to defend my country,
yeah,
which I love.
When that whole Terry Schiavo thing, I mean, you're from the South, when that whole thing was going down and they had all those freaks in front that were, you know, speaking in tongues and falling on the ground.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah.
Wasn't there a point where you're just sort of like, oh, man, I'm so embarrassed because they're doing this in front of Europe?
Well, it's like, you know, that's half of my family.
I know.
That's half of my relatives down there in front of Terry
Schiavo. How do you deal with
that? Half of my family is fundamentalist Christian, and the other half is alcoholic white trash. And
all right, most of them are both, I'm assuming.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, my uncles and my aunts will get into an argument at Christmas, you know, in North Carolina, and, you know, my uncle will say, you know, Jesus died on the cross for your sins, and she'll say,
well, that was mighty white of him, wasn't it? We all just better kneel.
They're out of their minds.
Well, there's a report out today. Did you see this? Family Research Council Executive Director Tony Perkins reportedly paid KKK Grand Wizard David Duke over $80,000 for his Who's Who of Racist America mailing list in 1996. Dig that.
Oh, man.
How do you like that?
Oh,
didn't mean to stifle the comedy.
Oh, God. Well, you know, all of those guys are, like, turning out to be, like, you know, child molesters and, like, you know. They are. They're all turning out.
At least, at the very least, sodomites.
Like the mayor of Spokane, Washington. The mayor of Spokane, Washington, you know, who, remember about him?
Yeah, sure.
You know, Mayor West of Spokane, Washington, mm-hmm. who was, like, the most anti-gay, family values Republican, turns out to be having, like, online, you know, hookups on gay.com, you know, and his, like. What about Ted Melman? Oh, you mean?
That's right. There's a theory. Yeah, that
this
Ken
is yes. This is just shout out any useless information as the audience goes on.
No, he knows. He's heard.
Ken Melman, who is the chairman of the Republican mm-hmm. National Committee, is allegedly a friend of Dorothy.
He's also allegedly Jewish.
Oh no, he is Jewish. He did come out as Jewish, but see, this is the thing: is that. He will not come out as a gay person.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody knows that he's like, you know, his screen name is, you know, like, you know, Washington, D.C. Butt Boy 402.
Nice. Where are the unreleased Melman Gannon pictures?
Yeah, I know, Jeff Gannon, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Maybe we should give him a little vote of support. Maybe we want Melman to come out. Can we please come out and own your sexuality?
Like, well, see, it's like... You know, it's like when Howard Dean just said that the Republican Party is mainly a white Christian party, and everybody had a fit, and then Ken Melman came on and said, well, you know, they would have been surprised to find that out at my bar mitzvah, ha, mm-hmm. ha, ha. And I just want to think, well, what else could we find out, Ken, that you're not supposed to say? Mm-hmm. It's like Ken can be a gay Jew in the Republican Party as long as he doesn't talk about either.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
It's true.
Good point.
Good point.
Hey, Jim, can you hang out a minute?
Of course.
Okay, we're going to come back. We're going to have Cardinal Milkington with us. Eric Bogosian is going to be with us. There's going to be more Jim David. We got the iNews 5000 come up. We're at the Strand Bookstore, 12th and Broadway in New York City. Come on down. Mark Wiley is on vacation with his family in Disney World. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. It's 45 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. We're coming to you live from New York's famous Strand Bookstore. 18 miles of books. We're at 12th and Broadway upstairs. We got Mud Truck Coffee. Listen to these people. They're caffeinated out of their minds. Come down, hang out. We got Eric Bogosian coming up. We got Jim David, comedian Jim David, the famous Jim David from Comedy Central, right here next to me. Being funny, talking about the Galapagos Island and whatnot. We got the iNews coming up in a few minutes. But right now, the Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. So no one knows when the end times will come. There are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milpington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Pomona, California. Your grace.
Heed my warning now, blaspheming lovers of words.
Your probing fingers have run up and down the musty pages of sin for the last time. And in the next chapter, Satan will spell out your punishment with endless dime store philosophizing on why Margaret Cho is the one that she wants. Prick up your ears, bibliophiles. The information desk is your entrance to Hades, and there are grumpy employee awaits you with potent body odor and a master's in James Joyce. You decide which is worse. Get ready to curl up with a red-hot book in hell, thy vain self-flatterers, who use big words when smaller words would suffice, like exegesis instead of gospel, epistle instead of letters, and supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, even though the sound of it is really quite a... Gah! Damn thee, Satan, thy powers are strong today. Diddle-diddle-a, utasa montita consarna Chewbacca. The end times are nigh, dorks. And you're about to experience the fiery breath of God's wrath, for Satan and Schuster have just published your autobiography. And Christ really feels gypped you didn't elaborate on the time you saw your hot stepmother in the shower. As you might recall, thrice abdominals ago, I spaketh unto you about a woman in North Carolina who had to remove 10,000 bees from her house. The week after that, I told you about a human leg, parts of a spine, and a hip that fell from the sky into the backyard of a family in New York. In the week after that, I told you if you want to go ahead and piss off 10,000 bees, don't be surprised when they cut you up and drop your ass in Long Island. Anywho, your time of reckoning is here. For according to a report by the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or as I like to call it, the National Organization for Antichrist Admirers, Texas and Louisiana are sinking into the Gulf of Mexico faster than Liz Taylor passed out on a defective arrowbed. You got that one, Mark?
I got it right here, man. That's a good one.
What's more, the report authored by a geologist from LSU or Lucifer Satan University.
Of course.
Shut up. Says the new data means garden spots like Houston, Galveston, Brownsville, and Port Arthur are now vulnerable to catastrophic flooding.
Oh.
What's more, midnight approacheth, thou painted harlots of Harmahob, and Jesus is lighting in the way by making wet on thee.
Oh, man.
For it was prophesied in Revelation, two meals for Sister Sarah, and I quote it. Hey, who asked for input from you, fella? I don't go down to where you work and push all the important papers off your desk. And I quote it. And the three bowls of God's wrath shall rain destruction down upon the land of Waffle Houses. The first bowl will be too hot. The second bowl will be too cold. And the third bowl will be just right, and everyone will drown. Then the baby Jesus will come home to find Ann Richards in his bed. The rest is too sickening to relate here. End quoted. So there you have it, losers. Stick a fork in your world, because it's done. But you don't have to worry about me, for soon I'll be standing before the judgment throne of Christ and his pet mongoose Nibbles. Yeah, he's got a pet and a mongoose. You're awake now, right? Maybe if you read your holy scriptures, crap like this wouldn't come as such a surprise to you. Until then, fornicators, keep on fornicating, and we'll keep the light on for you. In hell.
Thank you, Cardinal Milton. Have a cookie. Have a cookie.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Great. Great seeing you. We're going to do it.
See you later. I'll see you at Panic Attacks in Lodi.
Yeah. Okay, buddy. That's good stuff, man. Good stuff. Thanks a lot, buddy. All right. So, yeah. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it's tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, play along with this, Jim.
Yep.
Look at the iNews 5000 machine. Isn't that amazing? This is a Wi-Fi headline translator. And we got Brendan P.W. McDonald live on the intro.
Uh-huh.
From the New York Times, U.S. and Britain agree on relief for poor nations. U.S. and Britain agree on relief for poor nations. Translation, Bush vows, I'll get you for this, Bono. From the Associated Press, Bush urges Congress to renew Patriot Act. Bush urges Congress to renew Patriot Act. Translation, Bush warns, there's still a few tiny shreds of personal freedom left out there. From the ABC News, pilots guilty of being drunk in cockpits. Pilots guilty of being drunk in cockpit. Translation, pilots guilty of being drunk in cocktail. Cockpit. Whoa, somebody take the wheel. That's Brendan McDonald. Let's get another round of applause for Jim Earle as Cardinal Melfington, the extremely talented Jim Earle. I hear that Lawton Smalls might be coming by in a little while. We're down here at the Strand Bookstore. There's still time to come down. It's 18 miles of bookstore. It looks like it's raining a little, but don't let that deter you. We're
at
12th and Broadway.
Here at the Strand Bookstore, they have like 18 copies of the films of Ida Lupino.
Yes.
So, you want to
so if you're looking
out
for that, yeah, why are you just inviting your friends down? that's Jim David, folks. The wonderful comedian Jim David is going to be with us for a little while longer here. Eric Bogosian is coming out in just a second. So hold on for that.
Yeah.
All that coming up next. It's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. Riley's on vacation. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
The hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Edition. I am Mark Maron. Mark Riley is on vacation in Disney World. We're having our own theme park here at the Strand Bookstore on 12th and Broadway here in New York. We're up on the second floor. Come on down. We want to thank the, of course, the owners of the Strand and, of course, the mud truck and the New York Observer. You can come down here and get all jacked up on coffee and read the Observer.
Cocaine in it, I'm telling you.
That's comedian Jim David, who's been with us for about a half an hour, and it's not even annoying me. It's wonderful to have you here.
Yeah, thank you.
I love it. I love it. It's nice to see you. I want to congratulate, who do we got? Michael Ostro, who won a pair of tickets and round-trip transportation to see me in New Jersey on June 25th. At Bananas Comedy Club. If you weren't lucky enough to be here for that, you can go to bananascomedyclub.com and get tickets for the June 25th performance of me. Also, a lot of people, Guernmo and his daughter Bianca came all the way from Florida to see our show today. How are you, man? Riley's going to be sad he missed you. I'll tell him you stopped by. A lot of people coming from all over the place with presents. Melissa brought some cookies. Alyssa gave me a dream diary. I forgot your name already, but someone gave me some buttons. What's your name? Anna gave me some buttons. I'm all set for the week.
How neat to be on the radio. People give you things.
I know. It's weird with me because I can't accept that people like me. That I find like...
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know, sometimes when people give me something, I'm like, you sure you have the right guy?
Really?
I've done nothing to deserve this.
I do that, too.
Yeah. Our next guest is a true Renaissance man. He wrote and starred in the plays Talk Radio, Suburbia, won an Obie Award for his solo performances in Drinking in America, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. I'm a huge fan and a very funny man in his own right. His new book is called Wasted Beauty. Please welcome Eric Bogosian.
Yeah, this is...
I tell you,
8 o'clock in the morning, I say, what do I want to be doing? I want to be hanging around with some people who are screaming like those women right out of the Greek plays who come and tear men limb.
The Furies.
The Furies. Here it is.
We can have them come to your house every day.
I was coming up the steps. Yeah. It was like, it's a lynching up there.
Come
what are they doing?
It's a party.
It's
a party.
I have to say, it makes you wonder what's going on here exactly. Who are we? But here we are.
I remember that. You know, when I saw, when did I see? I guess I saw
if it was Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll when you were working on it up in Boston at ART, mm-hmm. I believe, or maybe it was down here when it was down at the theater on, you know, where Stomp is. What was it? You did it there too, right?
Yes, yes, theater? Yeah, Orpheum.
Right, because you've done audience interaction before, because you used to open that show. I don't know if it was just the night I saw it where you actually went out with a cup. Like
yes.
You were begging for money, and you waited until someone actually put money in.
Yes.
Just to say, sucker!
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yes. It was all a put-on thing, though, because not only did I play characters, but I played a character behind the characters, which was the character of the guy doing the show.
Yeah.
Which, see, I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
In real life, you peel back, and I'm just this grumpy guy that's usually asleep at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
But you've injected this coffee into my vein. The guy with the hypodermic needle, when I walked in, it was kind of frightening.
Yeah, a lot
and
of
they,
people
they strapped me up with this stuff, and I'm here.
So a lot of people chose the IV option. You can see that they're out there and rolling around their IVs. But we were talking about comedy briefly before we came on, because Jim and I came up in comedy clubs, and you came up in the performance scene here in New York City, which was a different scene. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, obviously a lot of your characters that you do in the shows I've seen are comedic. You just chose, you know, you had a different reaction to the stand-up scene, because you tried it once. It was horrible, right?
I tried Catch once.
Rising Star, which is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is it gone now?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
It's gone.
It was... It was like being run over and, well, I don't want to say what else it was like, but something had to do with the hindquarters of my body being penetrated.
You said it was like anal rape.
Yes, that's what I said earlier, yes. Let's just say it was tough, you know, because as you guys know, because you've done this, and maybe the audience doesn't know, but when you walk out on stage.
Raped, yes.
Jim, do we have to talk about your personal life?
I know, it's 8 in the morning, it's a little early.
You walk out on stage, and there's what the audience can't see is there's a red light and a green light, and it tells you whether you need to stop the show or you can keep going. As soon as I walked out, the red light started hammering.
Good evening, everybody. Get off the stage!
Yes.
And you went immediately to a theater.
I said, they're going to remember me anyway, and I did the show, but I went right to a theater.
I would have gone to a porn theater after that.
Again, do you have to tell how you started in comedy? Why is this all got to be about you, Jim?
My original audience had to spend a quarter every time they wanted to see me.
And vice versa. Yes, Eric?
Nothing. There's no follow-up to that.
Now the novel, this is a new form for you, novel.
My second book. I think you can get my first book downstairs for 50 cents a copy.
Right next to my first book.
Mall was my first book, and this is my second, Wasted Beauty. Yeah, I like this thing. It's not something I could have done when I was 30, but now I can sit and I can... now, see, every time I say something, Jim's going to say something. He's there. The gears are turning in his head. What wise-ass thing can I say about anal rape behind this next comment?
See, I've already said that.
Right. So now he's going to move into oral sex, which he'll try and figure out later.
Well, let's put it this way. When I was... No, I'm not going to rise to the occasion, but sitting...
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Eric.
Sitting down and knocking out 5 to 10 pages a day for 3 years is a little different, and I have that kind of focus. I can do that now.
Did you enjoy it? Do you enjoy like writing on a day-to-day basis? Because I assume that when you were doing character work, because I've seen several. The evolution of one of your shows, and you take characters in, you take characters out, some characters have new lines. I imagine that most of that work happens in an improvisational way. Is that true?
When it starts, when I'm making it up. I mean, the real tough part for me, and this is not to get you guys all serious, but the tough part is when I play the characters on stage, I'm the author and the actor at the same time, and it kind of tears me up in front of the audience. It's like, the author doesn't want to be there. The author wants to be hiding somewhere.
Yeah.
Writing a book, I can just write the book. Here's the book. You go read it. Because there's a lot of stuff in there that I don't really want to be present while you're reading it. I mean, there's stuff about things you do in bathrooms with the door locked. And Internet.
Now you just search.
No, internet. Internet's a great word because when a guy tells you that he's been surfing the net for last night for 3 hours, we all know what that means.
Yes.
But it's a code for something.
For 3 hours, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for you?
Surfing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I go to the free sites.
where they have those pop-ups that won't go away.
The thumbnails.
Thumbnails.
Somebody here's got a T-shirt on that says, where is that T-shirt?
Oh, yeah, Got MILF?
Got MILF,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the
And then again, if you know what that means, who knows what MILF means here? Raise your hand. Oh, look at all the guys. There we go. Okay, we'll see you later.
When you write a book, this is a novel, did you know how it was going to end?
No.
You didn't. So
sit there and you said, I enjoy it? I love it because I go into this fantasy world as I'm writing it.
Right.
And I live in this world while I'm writing it. And I don't know where it's all going to go. And I let the characters tell me where the story's going to lead me.
Yeah, because it's like every screenwriting course you ever take, it says, know your ending. Know where you're going to go.
But I've written for all the studios. I've written plays. And that's the problem, is this three-act structure thing is just too fascist for me. I mean, this thing I can meander. I can do
like self-discovery involved in this too, because when you're writing, like, wow, I didn't even know I was that smart. Look at me.
Or I didn't know I was that stupid. I mean, I'm walking around thinking I have this unique idea about something, and then you sit down and you put it on the page and go, that isn't unique. That's pretty trite and cliched. I'm a walking cliche. My thoughts about my own life are a cliche.
This is the creative process as described by Eric Bogosian here on Morning Sedition. Jim David, thanks for being with us. Appreciate you coming by. Comedian Jim David. Eric Bogosian's going to stick around for a minute. His new book is Wasted Beauty. We'll give a couple away when we come back. Stay with us. We're at the Strand. Riley is in Florida. We're at the Strand Bookstore in New York City, 12th and Broadway. It's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
All right, hey, it's 20 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're live at the Strand Bookstore here in New York City, 12th Street and Broadway on the second floor. There's still some coffee left. Mark Riley is on vacation in Disney World with his family. I hope he's having a good time. I wonder if we're in Orlando. I don't even know where we are. All right, good. We're going to be talking to Eric Bogosian a little more in just a second. He's sitting right here. Give it up for Eric. Past the hour, it's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
You're listening to Air America Radio. We're going to have actor Gary Sinise on here in just a little while. You might know him as Captain Dan from Forrest Gump.
Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah, that's right. Lieutenant Dan. Captain.
Captain is Captain Dan.
Captain Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman. Happy birthday, Lewis Pashman. You made it. Yeah, try and get a couple hours to yourself. Anyways, moving on, I will be at the Strand Bookstore tomorrow morning at 12th and Broadway, broadcasting this show while you're in Disney World. But don't worry, I'll be hanging out with Eric Bogosian. I'm going to have mayoral candidate C. Virginia Fields on. We got comedian Jim David. We're going to have coffee. We're going to have giveaways of tickets.
Swag,
baby.
You see me, June 25th in New Jersey. Win a trip to New Jersey to see Mark Maron, or go to BananasComedyClub.com.
I heard a rumor, too.
What's that?
What's his name supposed to be there tomorrow?
Who's that? Martin Small, yeah, I believe, will come down. Yes, he is. And I believe Sammy the Stem Cell will be there.
Oh,
and perhaps the liberal aggressor. You know that guy who calls the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
He's thinking about coming on. Look, let's get back into this. John Howard, John Dean, not the Watergate guy. Howard Dean made some comments about the Republicans, which were true. They were true comments. All right, I'll quote him. Quote, pretty much a white Christian party, end quote. Quote, unfortunately, by and large, it is, and they have the agenda of the conservative Christians, unquote. Now, when I hear these things, I'm like, well, that sounds like our show, Riley. It sounds like he's just telling the truth, telling it like it is.
He's been podcasting.
Exactly. He's stealing our stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, when other Democrats, people like Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Governor Bill Richardson, people like John Edwards,
yeah.
When they hear this, they immediately start to say, well, he's not speaking for the whole party. I'm going to distance myself from him. Bill Richardson literally just said, look, you know, he should keep his powder dry, I think was the phrasing he used. We got a few years. But all these wussies, all these centricrats immediately create a rift within the Democratic Party because of this guy speaking his mind, whereas they should just be saying, oh, yeah, Howard does that.
Yeah.
Not giving the Republicans more ammo, not taking a stand on their own, or just letting us have a different variety of points of view within this party. I mean, no one honors the party's ideology in a more, succinct way than Howard Dean in a lot of respects. And he's free of the bonds that, force people to be politic and careerist in terms of whether they're going to run for office. They should just thank Howard Dean and say, all right, that's Howard. Howard does his little thing, and, he says the truth, but, he does it in the Howard way.
Does this look like a party that is prepared to contest next year's off-year elections? That's all I care about.
I hope so.
I want to see some Democrats win.
Yeah.
And this kind of divisiveness does not create winning candidates. I don't care who they are. I don't care what the circumstances are. You all want to stampede to the center? Fine. Have a nice trip right if you get work.
Well, let's listen to what Howard Dean really said. Can we hear that, Chris?
The Republicans are not very friendly to different kinds of people. They're a pretty monolithic party. They pretty much, they all behave the same. They all look the same. And they all, it's pretty much a white Christian party.
Yeah, I mean, that is not...
Who was that? Jeff Gannon in the background scribbling?
Someone's sketching a picture. No, it's probably a mic on a reporter. But, it didn't sound that heinous to me. It sounded like he was just telling the truth. He was making a generalization. But so what? Just say, here's what you got to say. John Edwards, Nancy Pelosi, who was more diplomatic than the rest of them.
Yeah.
Bill Richardson. Here's what you got to say. You got to say, oh, yeah. Yeah, Howard. He's Howard.
Yeah. He'll be Howard. Let him be Howard.
Did you hear this other Howard bit? This came out last night, and a lot of people, I don't know if they even heard this. I haven't heard any reaction to Howard Dean. This is last night, Howard Dean.
What the f*** happened to the adults I used to know? Where's the spirit? Where's the gun? Huh? This could be the greatest night of our lives. You're gonna let it be the worst.
Oh, we're afraid to go with you, Pluto.
We might get in trouble. Well, just kick my ass from now on! Not me! I'm not gonna take this!
Senator Joe Biden.
He's a dead man!
Senator John Edwards.
Dead!
Governor Bill Richardson.
Dead!
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yeah, we're back. It's, we had a little, We did a little time travel there. I'm Mark Maron, this Morning Sedition, coming to you live from New York's famous Strand Bookstore at the corner of 12th and Broadway. Something happened, but we're back. Take with me that crowd. You know, it's hilarious. I'm with Eric Bogosian, the writer, author, performer. How are you, man? We're back. We time traveled to yesterday. That was yesterday's show. We were in yesterday.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And I'm so paranoid, I think that just happened because I'm here. I came on, the radio went down.
Oh, my God, it's battle of the self-centered guys. Here we go. I'm the same way. I'm the same way. But the funny thing is one guy in the audience, of course, the very decent marginal progressive says, hey, they're doing it, man. It's the CIA.
Yeah.
The CIA cut the wire. Look out the window, man. Look at the guy in the frog suit. Raining a lot here. Raining a lot. We're going to come back. We got the, you know, when we got, when we continue our show, we got Lawton Smalls. We got more with Eric Bogosian. You know, we're going to have, going to do the Cliff Notes and a lot of funny. We're here at the Strand. Mark Maron, Morning's Edition. Riley's on vacation. 27 past the hour. Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here, Air America Radio's Morning Citizen program, coming to you live from the Strand Bookstore in New York City on 12th Street and Broadway. It's raining, but that has not stopped anyone from coming down. Thank you, Strand Bookstore. Thank you, Mud Truck, for getting these people crazy. This Mud Truck coffee is nuts. And I got Eric Bogosian over here to my left, if you're watching in Radio Land. Now, Eric, you tell me that I've never had this mud truck coffee, but there's one down on A Street all the time.
Yeah.
And I've walked by it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Now I know.
All the socialist drink.
Oh, Mark. That's it.
That's where we go.
I see visions of a workers' rebellion. Starting in the coffee fields.
The problem is there's no line. You can't get in line. It's just people just all... It's anarchy.
Right.
It's
just, but that's the way they want it.
Yes.
If a line forms outside of the mud truck, you're like, no lines. Chaos. Right now in our studio, here at the Strand, his comic book, Sudden Impact, has appeared in the Village Voice since 1998. From Eyewitness News to Donald Rumsfeld's Secretary for Death and Destruction. And, Ward Sutton's new book, Sudden Impact, has a collection in color, I might add, a beautiful book. Good morning, Ward Sutton. How are you, man?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me here.
I just want to say something here that my kid came home from high school last night and said, "Hey, Dad, you're on the radio tomorrow with this really cool guy that all the kids really like." Yeah, I'm like, I am. I'm the cool. Aren't I the cool guy? That you know.
Yeah, you just got the announcement from the people that count that you're not cool. Is that what happened?
Well, let's put it this way: my kid might listen to it now because Ward's on the show. Because they get me for free, so they don't have to work.
So now, Ward, man, I'm looking right now at this Dick Cheney piece, which literally has Cheney in a freak show. It says Halliburton's bitch on it, and I hooked the nipple clamps is a canister of oil dripping with John Edwards. I'm assuming that's John Edwards in the lower left saying, "America, do you really want another 4 years of this freak show?" Now, this is some incredibly beautiful, venomous satire, man.
Well, I know I had to tone it down. Like, I couldn't really show
it
as it is. I had to kind of pull it back a little for the papers.
You left out the anal rape.
Yeah.
Is that going on here, too?
The anal rape joke back in there.
Oh, that's good. And Jim's not even here.
No.
He'll feel honored.
Yeah, actually, I think it's a real credit to the Village Voice that they never censor anything that I do. I mean, they really let me do what I want. And I've worked for tons of publications from the New York Times to Entertainment Weekly, and nobody lets me do this kind of stuff. And so it's a thrill to get it in a book and all in color.
It's great because you're probably they're not definitely not as cutting edge as they used to, so they're probably relying on you now, the Village Voice, to push the envelope.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Listen to people going, no, please don't assault one of two actual renegade news publications we have in this city. So I like seeing a relatively mild-mannered looking person being as angry and venomous as you.
Yeah.
I mean, you look like a mensch. You look like a guy who would not have all that vile and exciting anger in you.
Yeah, I think I kind of get it out in my cartoons.
Good.
And then I'm just sort of pleasant otherwise. People are usually surprised when they meet me, like, "You did that?"
And then they go, "I gotta go."
Yeah.
Love the cartoon, scary, gotta go.
Yeah.
But did you have you been doing this since you were younger? Has this been an outlet for you since you were younger, since you were like seven with your drawing pictures of your teachers with their head shut off, that kind of
thing? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. My first political caricature was of Jimmy Carter when I was in sixth grade, and that got put up on the wall, and it just encouraged me from there to keep going. And
that's so great.
Yeah.
So someone said, your teacher said, you know, this is what we should be doing.
Yeah, and it just kept me going. My teacher would let me sit in the back of the class and draw and didn't care if I did the schoolwork. And so I've got her to blame for.
Nice.
That's one of those free schools. So.
Yeah, yeah.
The Montessori school where actually the school was outside. Go outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hang something.
Yeah, you roll some J's.
Hey, luckily, we've got enough money so you'll never have to worry about college or anything. Again, groans. All right, fine. Don't make fun of the Village Voice or Montessori schools, man. This is progressive richland. let me get to something. Who are your favorite subjects? When you hear a bit of news, when do you go, oh yeah, now I can start drawing for realsies?
Well, I have to tell you, it's in the last 5 years. It's been unlike any other time in my cartooning career where every week I have to pick and choose what I'm going to tackle.
Who to hate.
I kind of wish I could do this on a daily basis, but it's kind of a love-hate relationship, though, because, you know, I hate to hear the things that are going on, but, of course, then they make great – it makes great material for a cartoon to turn it around.
And now, when people who know you, or do you get emails? Do you get we get flack sometimes from emailers, and people come up to you on the street. You probably have people who are like, "Thank God you're there." There's so much relief in that. Eric was talking about a piece he did that really moved him, and I imagine a lot of people are sort of, you know, it makes people feel like they're shared. You know, they're sharing their anger.
Yeah.
But you get the other stuff as well. Yeah. There you go.
I do get some of the anger, especially after times like the election, you know, people writing, ha ha, now leave my country, you know, you liberal bastard.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But it really moves me. People come up and thank me, which is, it really feels strange. But I do feel like with my cartoons, some people will look at how outrageous they can be and say, well, you're not going to change anyone's mind doing things like that. But it's really not my motivation to make the cartoons to change people's minds. I kind of want to try to give a voice to people who feel the same way that I do and just tell the truth as I see it using funny pictures. So.
Yay, truth. I think they're wrong, though, because I believe that graphic art can change people's minds, because I know it changed my mind. Because of a comic strip that I saw in World War III Illustrated, I stopped eating at McDonald's. It was just a comic piece about, you know, how horrifying McDonald's is and how they treat animals and how they treat the planet and everything else. And it was so impactful on the page, just visually, that it sold it. It sold it to me. I'd always, you know, questioned it before, and I wasn't a huge McDonald's guy, but never again after a cartoon, a comic strip.
Well, I do think that cartoons and graphics have a real power to be able to influence people, but I guess what I mean is that I'm not tailoring it to, like, well, I'm going to make a little rational argument here for why, you know, the Bush administration maybe isn't perfect. You know, I don't want to kind of appeal in that way that's really easy going. I want to just say it the way it is, you know.
Good for you. Not afraid to be politically incorrect. To get his point across. Yeah, there is a strand of liberalism that, you know, would look at your comments and go, do you have to have that in it? I mean, that kind of hurts. The dog seems to be in pain in that. I know it's about change, but why do we have to hurt dogs?
Yeah. I think that's true, yeah. Well, that even happens. I mean, that happens with, like, people who are with Michael Moore, you know. People are like, oh, well, I don't, you know, well, of course, you know, I don't like the Bush administration, but that's, you know, what he does, that's just not very respectful or something.
Yeah, I don't understand. Why does anyone owe anyone respect if they're not respectable? Screw them.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear. I've always thought that. There's nothing more contemptible than somebody who acts like they deserve respect when they've done nothing to actually warrant that respect.
And we're living in a country of that right now, from sea to shining sea.
Yes, and there are all these empowered ditto heads across this country that, you know, well, all they do is, you know, sit around and blame Clinton for everything.
Yeah.
And they think that they're smart. No, it's true. You could. There's some people, if you make any argument against anything that the neocon death cult is doing, that just go, but Clinton, you know, it's just, you know, and they think they deserve respect because they're the real Americans, and they're really not.
But I guess we have to give them some kind of credit for being creative, that they, in a situation where liberals are holding almost no power in this country, they still find ways to blame liberals for all the problems that are going on.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense. And for some reason, the people that follow them are so delusional and so brainwashed and so, you know, saturated in some sort of false religion that they can't see the truth at all.
I think this whole, the Howard Dean thing you were talking about earlier, I think that's a product of that. It's like, you know, all the things that are going on with this administration, and they're somehow, with the way that the mass media works, like the focus becomes on Howard Dean making a statement. Like,
right.
Well,
that's because all they do is have to drop a seed into the brains of the programs to get that, you know, that hate machine going, and the, you know, the sort of a lie mobile on its way. We're talking to Ward Sutton, political cartoonist. His new book is called Sutton Impact. The political cartoons of Ward Sutton. Also here, Eric Bogosian. His new book is called Wasted Beauty. We'll give away a couple of those on the break here. But coming up next, we've got Lawton Smalls and the Quip Note for today with the Strand Bookstore on Broadway and 12th in New York City. Mark Riley is on vacation. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. It's 43 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Hour, let's slam this thing. Mark Maron here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Mark Riley is on vacation in Disney World. Hope you're having fun, Mark. We're coming to you live from the Strand Bookstore at the corner of 12th and Broadway. Beautiful new floor here at the Strand as you come on down. Got the mud truck coffee going. Got the New York Observers being handed out. We're all jacked up. I got Eric Bogosian here, the author, playwright, actor, right here over here. Eric Bogosian. Got Ward Sutton, political cartoonist, author of Sutton Impact, the political cartoons of Ward Sutton. Also, Eric Bogosian's book, Wasted Beauty, is just coming out now. You can get that. Someone came up to me on the break and said, gave me this sign and said, Bolivia is listening to you. Can you say hola to Bolivia? Hola, Bolivia. How do you like that?
How long do you think it's going to be before Chavez's plane in Venezuela gets blown up by the CIA? We should be having like a countdown on that one, right? How long is it going to take the CIA to kill him?
Well, we'll ask some of our listeners. I'm sure they've got some speculation on that after the show. But right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now here again is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Hello, Mark.
So you're back in New York, huh? You can stay away. You having a good time, buddy?
This is missionary work for me, Mark. Not a pleasure trip to see Spamalot, buddy. I thought about all the sad New Yorkers I saw last week, and I said, Lawton Smalls, you should go back to Sodom and preach to the heathen.
Oh, no.
No pleasure in these walls, I promise you. No pleasure here.
What do you mean? You don't like bookstores?
Words, Mark. Filthy. False secular humanist, gay, multicultural socialist world.
Oh, man.
You New York liberals spend all day twisting them and turning them until they're something ugly and hurtful. You know what that sign should say? Strand, 18 miles of lies.
Oh, no.
Lies.
No.
That's a lot of lies.
No, come on, dude. Come on, man. Come on.
What do you mean?
Where'd you get that from?
From the top. President George W. two-term mandate Bush. The fact that he is uncomfortable and awkward and, well, frequently embarrassing with words.
Yeah.
That makes me love him.
Oh, you're sick. What does that mean?
You don't want to get too cozy with words, people. Oh. It's like getting too cozy with poor men.
Hey.
You know, it rubs off and it smells. Strong and
come
silent.
Come on.
Strong and silent.
Come on. Don't they have bookstores?
Strong and silent.
Dude.
Strong and silent.
Buddy, don't they have bookstores on Planet Bush? Come on.
Of course, Mark.
Uh-huh.
And all they sell are Bibles.
Yeah, of course.
Karen Hughes' autobiography. Uh-huh. Some Norman Vincent Peale. Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Okay.
Excellent book. And the Left Behind
series. No.
And that's how I feel in this place. Left behind.
Oh, come on.
Left behind.
So that's the only reading you approve of? Let's be honest.
Well, you know what?
Yeah.
I found out something. Y'all in New York have the New York Post, mm-hmm. which at least gives a fair and balanced coverage of the Bush presidency. That's the only thing you guys got going for you. And page six, of course. Uh-huh. I know all about Lindsay Lohan now.
Oh,
and stay away from Russell Crowe. Dangerous. Very dangerous.
So what should be people to, what should people do instead of reading Smart Guy?
It's a little thing called TV.
Oh, man.
You may have heard of it. The more time you spend at The Strand, the less time you're in front of your TV,
exactly.
And that's un-American.
Oh, come on.
All of y'all are wrecking our economy with your leisure reading.
Oh, shut up.
All right,
come on.
This is a temple to sloth. Instead of filling your head with trash like Bill Clinton or Ward Sutton or Eric Bogosian. Okay? You should be at home.
It's getting weird.
You should be at home, flip on Fox News, and leave it there. Sean Hannity will teach you more in 10 seconds than a whole day full of Eric Bogosian.
Wow.
I'm calling you out.
Wow, I didn't know you loved reading so much. I didn't know you loved reading.
Calling him out.
All right. Here's what I think.
I'm here.
All right, break it up, fellas. All right? See, the emotions are running high. See what you do on... Here's what I think. You love reading so much that this place is blowing your mind, buddy. Right now, you're surrounded by more profound thoughts and ideas than you've ever experienced in your whole life. And it's so beautiful that in about 5 seconds, you're going to break down and cry right in front of all these people. Cry!
You know... That is so presumptuous. And
come on, baby. Come on. There it is. What does it take? Look at that. The crying bush person.
It's beautiful in here.
You're right, it is.
My mind is so starved for knowledge. I'm starving. No one on planet Bush reads. None of them. Have you ever watched Fox News? Your IQ goes down a point every minute.
Yeah.
Watch it.
There you go.
Bill O'Reilly, come on!
It's all right,
That's not an intellectual.
Okay, buddy.
Mark,
I
want to leave here.
Yeah.
Do you think they let me sleep here?
Yeah, sure, buddy. You just talk to the
I won't talk to you or nothing. I promise. I just want to be around the book.
Oh,
touch the book.
I don't know. it's
please.
Okay. It's all right.
I'll read Eric's book. I think he's great. And Ward, I love his stuff.
Yeah, okay. All right, buddy. All right, can you pull it together?
I got it at home in his...
Oh, he'll read it to you.
He's going to read it.
Eric Bogosian is going to read you his book.
I have Eric. My reading level's pretty low, and you're going to need to do that.
All right, Dave. Hey, buddy. You think we can pull it together for before we get out of here? You all right? You all right? Come on. Yeah, what's going on?
You know, I think of all the trees that died to publish all this trash. That could have been used to build a strip mall.
Hey,
18 miles of line.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you.
Uh-huh.
Deal with it.
All right, I'm trying. Lawton Small, as portrayed by the inimitable Kent Jones, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to thank The Strand, Nancy Bass, Brett Bass, Joyce Chambers, Sabrina Rivapinto, Charlie Ryan, and all the staff at The Strand. I want to thank the Mud Truck for getting us all jacked up. I want to thank the New York Observer, of course, for giving you the free New York Observer. In 2 weeks, we'll be live at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn. What was that? I couldn't read Brooklyn. The Tea Lounge in 2 weeks. I want to thank Eric Bogosian, Ward Sutton. The books are The Political Cartoons of Ward Sutton and Eric Bogosian's book, Wasted Beauty. Great having you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
thanks for having us.
Okay. For those of you who are just tuning in or here, or missed the show, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Quick Notes. In Oklahoma, the Tulsa Zoo will have a display on creationism. Weirdly, the idea was suggested by the zoo's snake. Near the creationism exhibit, angry scientists want to put an evolutionary timeline showing exactly when Homo sapiens in Oklahoma stopped using their brains. The display says that man is made in his image, so God is portrayed as violent, gullible, and fat. Japan hopes its economy will be revitalized by robot sales. The Japanese robots can work long hours under difficult conditions without complaining or making mistake. They were formerly called Japanese guys. Hispanics are America's fastest growing minority. One person in seven is Hispanic, and if you don't believe it, just look at the six guys in the car next to you. Someday, if you parse it, it's not actually that stereotyping. Someday we'll all be impressed when the president bothers to learn a few expressions in English. Today's phrase just dropping into conversation. Hey, Bill O'Reilly, 1 in 7 Americans is Hispanic. Factor that into your all-white world, pendejo. Wake up, sheeple. Beaver Cleaver's family is now named Chavez. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Thanks to all the people at Air America who helped out. Nod Emmerich, Matt Emmerich, Katie Pagankoff, Neil O'Donnell, Juan Diaz, Gerald Downer, Arthur Hoyt, Scott Elberg, Bob Perry, Jonathan Larson, J.L. Clutch Larson, Terry Keeney, Lucy Kerrigan, Chris Kalo Lepresto on the board. Give him an applause. Dan Passman, Brendan McDonald. Oh, next week we got Nora Ephron. We got Robert Paxton on fascism. Riley is back. You guys have been great here at the Strand. What a great time. Great show. Have a good weekend. Air America Radio out. 57 past the hour.